Today's Teisho will be on case 94 in the Book of Serenity. Dongshan is unwell. Introduction. The lower do not discuss the higher. The base do not move the noble. Even if you can control yourself and follow others, you still cannot toil in the heavy by means of the light. When the physical elements are out of tune, how does one attend and nurture? Case. When Dongshan was unwell, a monk asked, "You are ill, teacher, but is there anyone who does not get ill?" Dongshan said, "There is." The monk said, "Does the one who is not ill, look after you?" Dongshan said, "I have the opportunity to look after him." The monk said, "How is it when you look after him?" Dongshan said, "Then I don't see that he has any illness." Verse. Taking off the smelly skin bag, casting away the red mass of flesh. Directly, the nose is straight. Immediately, the skull is dry. The old doctor doesn't see the indigestion from before. The little one looks in on him, but it's hard to approach. When the meadow streams are thin, the autumn ponds recede. Where the white clouds end, the old mountains are cold. You must cut off absolutely. Don't be big-headed. Evolving to the utmost effortlessness, he attains to the state. The lone standout is not in the same class as you. So, thank you all for making such a wonderful effort. This is the final day of our sesshin, and I must say, people who come into Dokusan, it's very clear that everybody's practicing wholeheartedly, and really deep sitting, deep samadhi. It's wonderful to see. This kind of practice is so precious. You know, it's impossible in daily life to sit with this depth. You know, if you practice every day, you know, that would be wonderful. Please do. If you practice twice a day, even better. But this kind of sustained practice, right? We have been sitting here for, we're on the cushion in one way or the other for 8 hours, you know. That is deeply transformative, deeply liberating. So if you have not been to sesshin yet, please put it on your bucket list. Very, very important. And let me just mention that we have a sesshin in May, at the end of May, which is, you can come for a weekend, you can come for 5 days, or you can come for 7. It's a true Chan Chi. True Zen sesshin, which has, people have been doing sesshin like this for 1,000 years. Thousands and thousands of people have awakened through this means, right? This is such a wonderful path, you know, tens of thousands of people, you know. So there's no reason you can't join that number. So please put that on your calendar if you're free at that time. So today, this koan is a wonderful koan because it's so utterly incomprehensible, right? Master Dongshan was unwell, and a monk said, "You are ill, teacher. Is there anyone who does not get ill?" See, he says, "There is." And he says, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" Dongshan said, "Well, actually, I look after him." And he says, "When you look after him, what happens?" And Dongshan says, I see that he doesn't have any illness. So it's like, what could that possibly be about, right? So I would say, well, let me help to unpack this koan by telling a story, okay? There's a story about, we were talking earlier this week about Master Matsu, and horse ancestor, basically, is what his name means. And he, when he was a young monk, he came to a temple, a Chan temple, and he was an unusual monk because he was practicing with such determination, right? You know, he was a unhappy person, you could say. And you know, actually, most people in the world are unhappy. You know, unhappiness, I think, is a part of the ordinary human condition, right? And some people live their lives in unhappiness, and they find compensations for everyday ordinary unhappiness, you know. In fact, some of you may know this, Sigmund Freud, the founder of psychoanalysis, said his job was to take people who were in abject misery and treat them, and at the end of the process, they would have ordinary unhappiness. That's what he said. So the best he could do was take you from abject misery to ordinary unhappiness. I think that's really honest, right? It's really honest. So, I mean, Freud also believed that sort of human baseline is unhappy, right? Something is, you know, we can do so many things to make ourselves happy. You know, you can go on a vacation to Aruba, you know, you can buy a new car, you know, all of these things in the quest for happiness, right? And at some point, some people realize, you know, none of this is, I have a new car, I'm still unhappy. I went to Aruba, I'm still unhappy. You know, why am I unhappy? And at some point, people become unhappy enough or curious enough about looking for something else to get out of unhappiness that they stumble into Zen, right? They stumble into Buddhism. And, you know, Buddhism resonates. The Buddha was quite aware of what I'm saying. You know, he said basically the ordinary human condition is suffering, right? Suffering is the baseline human condition. And so, you know, people don't always want to face that squarely, right? They deny it or they try to find ways out of that. But sometimes, you know, people can't find a way out of that, right? And then they think, well, maybe I need to change my life. Maybe I need to change my life, you know? Some people will be fortunate enough to go to a Zen center or a community like ours or many other communities, and they'll learn how to do meditation practice, right? And I think that's a momentous step. You know, when people are willing to say, something is missing from my life, you know, something is wrong with my life, and most people don't want to say that, right? They don't. But once they do, you know, they might try this, and I have to say, it's unbelievably wonderful. Right? In 2 years, I will have been practicing Zen for 50 years, right? And I get up in the morning, and the first thing I do is Zazen, and I can't wait to do it. You know, I was sitting here on this cushion about 2 hours ago, and I just thought, I love this. I love this, right? And, you know, probably when you leave Sesshin, your head, your mind will be in a much better place, right? Because, you know, going through these 5 days together in this way is like medicine, right? It's like medicine. Sanskrit words, moksha, moksha. This is moksha, right? So you know, people get very unhappy, and then they come to sesshin, and you know, we get up at 4:30 in the morning, and we do zazen. We're on the cushion for 8 hours, and you know, your legs hurt like hell, but when you leave the sesshin, it's like the world has been purified, right? It's like the world has been purified. And that is so wonderful, right? So you know, ancestor horse, ancestor Ma, was unhappy. And he was so miserable. And he came to a Zen temple and he started training. And, you know, he was one of these people who, you know, doesn't take a break. He sits. You know, Alex here at he's been sitting like a house on fire, right? So what in determined practice, you know, reminded me of Ma. Ma was like that. You know, he was sitting. And people come to sesshin sometimes, you see that. That intense practice is so admirable. But you know, actually, it's possible to misunderstand what it is about Zen that's so liberating, right? It's possible to misunderstand that, right? You know, one way to misunderstand this situation is that you are basically you're basically cut off from your Buddha nature, or you're basically cut off from happiness, you're basically cut off from enlightenment. And unless you work very, very hard, you'll never attain it, right? So that's how Ma was thinking about the path, right? It's that basically I'm living in hell, right? And I need to be rescued from hell by something. I don't know what. And anyway, he was practicing like day and night. And one day his teacher came into the Zen hall with a tile in his hand. And he sat, you know, all the other monks, it was a break period. And all the other monks had left the hall. And Ma is sitting there meditating. And the teacher comes in and sits right in front of him where Ma can't help but notice. And the teacher starts polishing a roof tile. And Ma says, "What are you doing?" And the teacher says, "I'm polishing a roof tile. I'm trying to make it into a mirror." And Ma says, "Oh, well, you can polish it forever, but you will never be able to turn a roof tile into a mirror." And the teacher says, "Exactly. So what the teacher is really saying is that, you know, if you're looking for Buddha outside yourself, you know, outside yourself, you're looking in the wrong place, see? That you can, if you aren't fundamentally Buddha already, no amount of practice is going to make you a Buddha, see? This is really interesting, I think, you know. So if you say to some like monks from Theravada country, you know, no amount of practice can make you enlightened. Enlightenment is fundamentally what you are. They won't even understand. They might think you're crazy, right? But that's what Ma's teacher said to him. So this story in Zen is really famous, a very famous story, and it's actually rather popular in American books on Zen. The idea is that, you know, you can polish the tile forever, but it won't become a mirror no matter what, and you can practice forever, But you won't wake up if you're not already fundamentally a Buddha. See, I hope I'm making some sense. Now, the American understanding of this is very confused, right? There was a guy who's very popular, a writer, in my generation. His name was Alan Watts. If you ever have read The Way of Zen by Alan Watts, it's an absolutely wonderful book. I highly recommend it. Please read it, but don't believe a word what he says, right? It's just great. It's so exciting. It's what one of the things that got me interested in Zen, but he's so wrong about so many things, right? And one of the things he said was that after Ma learned this, he realized we don't have to do Zazen anymore. That's what he said. And but you know, actually, Zen Buddhism didn't stop doing meditation, right? Even after he learned this from his teacher. So, you know, one way to misunderstand this story is to say, oh, I'm already a Buddha. Nothing, no effort is necessary, right? I'm already perfect just as I am, right? See, that would be a misunderstanding of the story. You know, waking up takes a lot of effort. Everything takes effort, right? If you get a degree at college, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of one-nighters, all-nighters, right? A lot of, if you, you know, have a business and you run your own business, takes a lot of effort. You know, enlightenment is a challenging achievement, right? It takes a lot of effort. And it takes a great deal of patience and commitment. So there's no question about that. If somebody ever says, I have the easy path, you know, please don't listen to him, right? The Buddha himself had to sit for many years, right, before he woke up. And according to Buddhist thinking, that was after many lifetimes of selfless service to humankind, right? So even with all that, it still took him, you know, a number of years to wake up. So just like a sesshin, sesshin is work, right? So the interpretation of the story as saying you don't have to sit would be incorrect. But what Ma's teacher was trying to communicate to him, I think, is really much more important, much more valuable than that, right? I think that what Ma's teacher was telling him is that everything is helping us to wake up, right? Everything is helping us to wake up. So, you know, we think that sometimes life is, people have this idea. We say, in English, we have this expression, bad karma. That's bad karma. You know, and we might say, oh, I have bad karma today. I have bad karma. Or, you know, I just didn't succeed. I had bad karma. See, what Ma's teacher was telling him is really there's no such thing as bad karma. There is really actually no such thing as bad karma. Even your so-called bad karma is trying to help you wake up, right? So, you know, it's like, I believe this, you know, that something inside you, inside all beings, is like a Buddha trying to get out. Really, I really believe that. You know, when people come to sesshin, you know, they go into deep samadhi, they break through their barriers, and I see sitting across from me Buddha. It's an enlightened being. And you know, people still have habits and so on, but I see for a moment or for longer, an enlightened being in front of me, right? It's like an opening, and there's the Buddha. There's the enlightened being. There's enlightenment. And I really deeply believe that all our lives, you know, there's a Buddha trying to get out, yeah, trying to manifest. And, you know, because of our circumstances, our causes and conditions, we don't know how, we don't, he doesn't know how to get out, right? So, you know, we make a lot of mistakes in our life. We wander a lot of, we go down a lot of dark roads sometime, right? You know, and we make mistakes. But even when we make mistakes, and even when we do things that are bad, I believe, we're, it's like we're groping, trying to get to enlightenment, right? There, you know, there's often no other way to get to enlightenment but to make one mistake after another, you know? It's like you just blunder sooner, you know, the Buddhist view is that sooner or later, all beings are going to wake up. See, I love the Lotus Sutra, right? Because the Lotus Sutra says that. It says all beings are going to wake up sooner or later. Even the Buddha's evil cousin, Devadatta, who tried to kill him twice, right? Eventually achieves enlightenment. Yes, that's what the Lotus Sutra says. So you know, even Trump can become a Buddha, you know. And when people do things that we think are terrible, they are terrible. You know, people can do incredibly cruel things, but you know, actually they're it's a Buddha who has become confused, right? That's really what Ma's teacher was saying. Believe it or not, that's what. Even terrible things that happen, people, their Buddha nature has become confused. See. So you know what this means is that please have confidence in your true nature. You know, most people don't trust themselves. Most people see themselves as. You know, I think most people look down on themselves. You know, I have a friend who's a very famous literary critic, and he's written I won't tell you his name, but he's written these books that are just famous. And one time I opened a literary magazine, and it had a picture of his latest book, and it said, "This is, you know, the Renaissance according to so and so." It's like, He's so famous, everybody in the world, in the English-speaking world, knows who he is. And I was having lunch with him, and he just basically said, "I feel like such a loser." It was amazing, right? He said, nobody reads my stuff, but. And he was comparing himself to somebody else, and he was saying, everybody reads him, So he felt like a loser, even he. And most people would say, "Oh, just to be him for 5 minutes would be wonderful." You know, people don't trust themselves, and they don't trust their meditation practice is all about trusting in your intrinsic Buddha nature. If you just trust that, and you know, like when you came to Sesshin. There were so many things you could do with your time. You know, maybe, you know, you're going to get out of Sesshin and you're just going to have this terrible, hectic schedule. You know, many times I have had that situation myself where I get out of Sesshin and it's like, "Oh, brother, this is going to be..." But, you know, you listen to the voice of your Buddha nature and you came here, right? And when you listen to that voice, you know, you're liberated from your self-doubt and your confusion. And it's like the path is really like, it's not like Buddhahood is something that's very remote, very difficult to find. It's speaking to you. It told you to come to Sesshin. It's helping you work through your koans. And if you just trust that voice, you will wake up. That's the promise of the Dharma, yeah? It's causes and conditions have to be right for you to wake up, you know? And when we have an opportunity to practice like this. You know, think about how rare it is for all of these things to line up, right? Where, you know, basically we have a building, and Murray Grove, where we practice, is like the perfect place, right? Kitchen, dining room, zendo, place to do dokusan, dormitory, you know, what more could you ask for, right? It's nice to be around other people who want to wake up, right? Who want to wake up. And it helps to have people to guide you on the path, right? All of those things are necessary to have something like Sesshin. You know, some people couldn't come here because they were sick. You know, two or three people got COVID, RSV, a family member dying, right? Or on the edge of death. All of these things get in the way. But you had infinite obstacles, but you came here, and causes and conditions were right. And so you listened to your true nature, and you weren't confused, and you know, you've all opened up to your Buddha nature a little bit more, right? And this process goes on. If you want it to go on and on, it goes on and on, right? And I have to admit, it can take some time, right? It's like, I don't know, some people here know, I'm a big fan of the greatest Zen master of the last 200 years was a Chinese monk named Xu Yun. And when I was like 20 years old, I read a book about Xu Yun, and it's one of the things that got me interested in Zen. I was so astounded. He was such an astonishingly awakened person and deep practitioner. And when I bought this book at a bookstore, it was called Chan and Zen Teaching by Lu Kuan Yew. And it just blew my mind, as we say in English. It was just like the most amazing thing to read. You know, even Xu Yun, who started practicing when he was like 18, was in his 50s before he had his great awakening experience, right? So, you know, deep practice for years and years. And the causes and conditions had to be right, for that to happen. He was going to a Sesshin, and he was walked the whole way. And he was crossing a stream, and he fell off into the freezing water, and he got an ear infection. And he went to the temple, and he had a raging fever. And somebody was serving tea, and he reached for the cup, and it fell off the tray and hit the floor. And when it hit the floor, he was face to face with the Dharmakaya, right? Fashen. Luckily he lived to be 120 years old. So if you practice Zen, you might live to be 120 years old. But even Joshu lived to be 120, and Lin Ji lived to be 51. See, so it doesn't matter how long you live, as long as you're listening to your true nature, right? So you know, all your life, all my life, I didn't know it, but I was looking for this. And when I started practicing Zen, I felt like I was home. You know, it's like, now I know. Now I know where I'm going. See, now I know. And you know, it doesn't mean you've arrived at the destination, but you're on the path, right? And you know, in a way, every step on the path is, you know, encountering the Buddha. You know, every time you come to Sesshin and you have a breakthrough, great or small, it's like this, you're encountering your own Buddha nature. And so, you know, one way to think about Zen practice is you keep encountering your Buddha nature. It's like little by little, you meet your Buddha nature. You know, and finally you realize, oh, the Buddha nature is who I really am. You know, that's what we really mean by great awakening, right? You keep meeting your true nature, and one day you realize, oh, this is what I really am. This is what I really am. So every step along the way is like a breath of fresh air. It's like you're doing, I would say, what you've wanted to do all your life but just didn't know, right? And how can you tell? You know, that just sounds like a story. But you know, I would say when you sit down on the cushion, you know, and you get off the cushion, you feel more alive, you feel more free, you feel more connected, right? And you come to Sesshin and you purify body, mind, and word. And when you leave here, it's like every atom of your being has been cleaned, right? Every cell of your mind has been cleaned. That says you're on the right path, I would say, right? And we all have obstacles. We all have moments when it's difficult, right? When I was training with Genki Takabayashi, you know, there were times when I was just so low, you know, but you know, something kept me hanging in there. And sometimes I remember I was working on one koan with Genki-san, and I was so mad, I think I threw my shoe out the window or something. You know, I was furious. But you know, I didn't leave. I stayed, and you know, it was like I'm so glad I stayed. So what has this got to do with sickness and medicine, right? I mean, what is this all about? What am I talking about anyway? So look, we're all unwell, right? We're all unwell. But fundamentally, we are the one who is not unwell, right? Fundamentally, we're the one who is not unwell. You know, there is at the core of our being this enlightened consciousness, So he says, "Is there anybody? You're ill. Is there anybody who's not ill?" And Dongshan says, "Yes, there is, as a matter of fact." And the monk says, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" And in fact, you know, Dongshan could have said, "Yes, that's true," but he also says, "It's I have the opportunity to look after him." So look, you can put it this way. Your Buddha nature is constantly trying to help you wake up. It's constantly tried to help you to wake up all your life. But you have to help too, you know? You have to help a little bit too. So the you know, Buddha nature is working hard, but you have to take care of your Buddha nature, right? And by coming to Sesshin, you've taken good care of your Buddha nature. By sitting for 7 hours a day, you've taken excellent care of your Buddha nature. See, and so I thank all of you for doing that. Even if you are only just beginning the path and you're learning how to sit for half an hour, and it's challenging to get through 20 minutes, you're taking good care of your Buddha nature. And your Buddha nature will not let you down. It will not let you down. I have the opportunity to look after him. The monk said, "How is it when you look after him?" And Dongshan said, "Then I don't see that he has any illness." It's like if you look after your Buddha nature, if you take care of your Buddha nature, you know, you have no illness, right? You have no illness. It's like, I don't know how many times I've been in emotional or mental distress, and I sit down on the cushion, and it's suddenly like all unimportant. It's like you're focused so narrowly, it's like your whole being is focused on one square inch. And you sit down on the cushion and it's like open sky in all directions. Ao zo, lan tian, right? Blue sky, right? There's blue sky mind, right? And that's so wonderful, right? So that's what this koan is kind of all about, right? If we take care of the one who has no illness, we ourselves will have no illness, right? And everybody at this sesshin has taken care of the one who has no illness so lovingly and with such courage and intensity. So thank you all. And those of you who have been online also have just done a wonderful job. When Dongshan was unwell, a monk asked, "You are ill, teacher, but is there anyone who does not get ill?" Dongshan said, "Yes, there is." The monk says, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" And Dongshan could say, "Yes, but," he said, "I have the opportunity to look after him. I can look after him because causes and conditions have been right for me to do so." The monk said, "How is it when you look after him?" Dongshan said, "Then I don't see any illness." Okay. Taking off the smelly skin bag, casting away the mass of red flesh, directly the nose is straight, immediately the skull is dry. The old doctor doesn't see the indigestion from before. Cured, cured. The little one looks in on him, but it's hard to approach. When the meadow streams are thin, the autumn ponds recede. Where the white clouds end, the old mountains are cold. You must cut off absolutely. Don't be big-headed. Evolving to the utmost effortlessness, he attains to the state. The lone standout is not the same in the same class as you.